Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have multiple guests, actually. And we have Jason Mitchell, and we have Ben Holen. Everybody knows Jason, Ben Holen. It's his first time on the show. Ben is the Aquatic Nuisance Species Coordinator in the state of for the state of North Dakota, and he works out of Jamestown. And this is just a really this whole episode is a little bit different because, you know, I wanted to do a show. I had some questions for Ben and in his profession and talking about North Dakota and what's going on with ANS and just really curious about what happens at his job. And, you know, there's a lot of messaging out there with awareness of ANS, you know, the clean, drain, dry. You know, I feel like any angler, especially boating anglers, anybody that travels to fish anywhere, you know, there's so much of that messaging out there, and it's so great. We always need to be talking about awareness. We always need to be bringing awareness to the forefront on ANS. You know, that being said, though, I feel like there's definitely an opportunity on a podcast like this to really ask some more questions and just get some more perspective and really add a lot of texture, I guess, or information, if you will, to the conversation with anglers, especially. I want to give anglers an opportunity to listen to somebody like Ben talk about his job, talk about what's going on out there, and just how it all goes down for him, and maybe some information that might be educational, just in some way, shape, or form. I just think that these are good conversations to have. And the Jason Mitchell portion of this conversation is kind of fun and definitely different for this particular podcast, where Jason and I are just having a phone conversation. We're talking about these topics just between the two of us. And I just felt like Jason had some really fun ideas. His perspective on it, we definitely got into a conversation where I thought, oh my goodness, you know, with this conversation that I had with Ben, having this conversation with Jason, I really just wish we were recording it. And so Jason was down to get the equipment out. I pressed record, and Jason just has a lot of fun things to add to it. And again, it's just all about adding a lot more texture, adding a lot more perspective, meaningful perspective to the conversation, around, or the awareness portion of the conversation that we're all familiar with ANS. And this is definitely an evolving conversation because, you know, we keep learning more about how nuisance species or invasive species, whichever you prefer terminology-wise, but how they are affecting the fishing experience that anglers are having in different places. And it's different everywhere. And so the conversation between anglers that, you know, pertains to these kind of topics, it's all different. But here in North Dakota, which we're focusing on North Dakota in this conversation, we've got some pretty spectacular fishing opportunities, and Jason definitely has some great perspective on that. And Ben definitely shares a lot of great information that I think for anybody that's willing to listen to this whole thing, you're definitely going to have a lot of good takeaways from it. And just good stuff. Good stuff. Really fun podcast. Definitely a little bit different. Very impromptu. Did not have any clue what we were getting ourselves into when Jason agreed to having me press record on this conversation. So, hopefully you're entertained by it a little bit. And let's get into it. We got Jason Mitchell and Ben Holen. We're talking about the fishing opportunities in North Dakota and ANS. So let's do it. This is going to be kind of fun. This has definitely got a little bit different, going to have a little bit different feel than a lot of our podcasts, because this is very impromptu, actually. This is just kind of a fun little conversation between you and me. But later on, I've got a conversation with Ben Holen, the Aquatic Nuisance Species Coordinator in North Dakota, and I'm definitely looking forward to that. But you and I were kind of having a conversation about these topics. And you were sharing, I mean, just talking, you had some cool perspective, and I was hoping you'd be down to record it. And, so here we are, just talking about, aquatic nuisance species, and just, you know, looking at the industry, all the awareness and all these different conversations that happen, you know, regionally, the different places with anglers, the angler's perspective really is what I think is the most interesting. And talking about North Dakota specifically in this conversation, both with you and then later on with Ben, that's kind of the basis of this conversation. So I kind of wanted to just pass it on to you. You and I have kind of already started this conversation. I want to go back to the beginning and just kind of have you share some of your thoughts on this topic as it pertains to North Dakota, man. I'm just going to kind of throw it at you like that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we've been pretty lucky, obviously, North Dakota, you know, what rugby North Dakota, the claim of fame, geographical center of North America, you know, all this stuff is coming from other places for the most part. You know, a lot of it's coming from the east, you know, especially like the Great Lakes and then moving inland, you know, when you look at like zebra mussels in particular. I think for a lot of anglers, you know, I think a lot of anglers were a little bit cynical in the sense that with the aquatic nuisance species, or some states are calling invasive species, you know, there were some regulation changes and rule changes. For example, you had to drain the water out of your live well. You couldn't drive home with your fish in the water in the live well anymore. You had to drain the live well. Well, that, what does that mean? You got to get a cooler and get ice, you know? And so we had to kind of change how we did things. You couldn't, you know, have minnows in a bait well anymore, because at the end of the day, you had to scoop all the minnows out of your bait well and try to figure out somewhere to put them, you know? And so then we started using, you know, coolers with aerators, you know, and, you know, we had to change how we did things, you know, draining, pulling the plug on your boat, pulling the plug on your live well. And it's not that big of a deal, but, you know, I think a lot of people in the beginning were kind of, were skeptical, you know, like you look at, you know, there's a lot of examples, you know, where you could argue that aquatic nuisance species improved the fishing, you know, the gobies in Green Bay, the zebra mussels on Lake Erie, you know, I mean, there's some phenomenal fisheries that have invasive species. But, you know, just from what I've been able to gather, you know, here's something that makes North Dakota really, really unique and I think pretty special, okay? We've got some of the best fishing on the planet, you know, some of the best walleye fisheries, some of the best walleye fishing, some phenomenal bass fishing, you name it. We've got some phenomenal opportunities in the state. What is interesting is that if you were to take anglers and drop them in this state in North Dakota, say 150 years ago, most of these opportunities wouldn't have existed. You know, you'd be really disappointed to come to North Dakota in 1850 and, you know, and fish for fish as we know it today, you know, bass, walleyes. You would have found sturgeon and suckers and catfish on the Missouri River, but, you know, the ecosystems look completely different today. The biomass is completely different today. You know, a lot of these inland lakes, you know, didn't have the fishing that we see today. You know, a lot of these perch sloughs, for example. And, those have been artificially created. And so, you know, hats off to the Game and Fish Department for being so aggressive all these years, you know, stocking all these lakes and creating all these opportunities. But here's the magic in my mind. You take a slough, okay, it's a duck marsh, it's 3 feet deep. You add a wet cycle and now it's 12 feet deep. Maybe there's a county road that goes to the slough and there's a public right-of-way access. So the North Dakota Game and Fish deems that, you know, there is a public access here, or we can get a, you know, some type of an easement to provide some type of an access, we're going to just stock walleyes and perch into that lake. Nothing else is in there except for maybe some fathead minnows or some sticklebacks, lots of invertebrates. Well, the growth rates and the productivity of those lakes is off the charts because you don't have any competition. You don't, you know, you can't go over to, say, northern Minnesota or northern Wisconsin and find a lake where there's no fish and then put whatever species you desire into that lake and then watch them explode. You know, and so that's what makes North Dakota pretty unique and special in that regard, especially with our prairie pothole lakes. And so, you know, that's part of the magic is keeping it simple. You watch their stocking reports. I mean, there's some lakes where they'll put maybe 3 or 4 or 5 species of fish if there's some different habitat, whatever, but it's pretty simple. You know, you put 1 or 2 species of fish in a lake and there's no competition and they explode, you know. And you add aquatic nuisance species into that, and that's just another wild card. You know, it's just another wild card. And so, you know, I think anglers are starting to understand what we have as far as how special it is. Understand that there was a lot of people in a lot of places that would really be jealous and envious of the fishing opportunities that we have. That's it's easy to take for granted if you've never been anywhere else. But that's part of the pixie dust, though, is that, you know, you take these new lakes and you put a couple of fish species in them. You know, a lot of them are stocked with perch and walleyes, and then, you know, come back 4 years later and holy cow, you know. And in my mind, you know, that simplicity is why we have some of these phenomenal fisheries, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to hear, you know, Ben's perspective, obviously, and they've been keeping a pretty close eye on all that stuff. But the biggest thing is it's so easy to do, you know. I mean, draining your live well, I mean, that's, you know, not that big of a deal. Pulling the drain plug on your boat, drain your bilge, that's not that big of a deal either. Now, we can argue that, oh, all it takes is one. Well, yeah, that's true with anything. But, you know, you look at how lucky we've been so far, and I think anglers can kind of pat themselves on the back and acknowledge, you know what, that education, that awareness does seem to be making a difference because we've been pretty lucky so far.
You make a good point with just how lucky we are here in North Dakota, not just as North Dakotans, but the non-residents, like anybody, you know, North Dakota, and you could probably, you know, dovetail, you know, the like glacial lakes of South Dakota, like the pothole style fishing. I'm speaking from, you know, the amateur angler. When I travel to fish, but when I'm here in North Dakota, I just feel like maybe 10-20% better everywhere I go, because it's simple. I don't have to feel inadequate. I don't have to be a sophisticated thinker in a lot of these places. In your job, in your profession, you travel to fish everywhere. You fish these, you know, the Great Lakes, or, you know, some of these bodies of water that, you know, are you know, notoriously, you know, clear water scenarios with zebra mussels, and, you know, fishing the Great Lakes, Green Bay, where the Gobi deal. I still just love more of your perspective on what you like coming back, you know, to Devil's Lake, Lake Sakakawea, or just, you know, the small potholes, that perspective, or what is that comparison like, you know, when you come out on these opportunities. It's just like, it's a lot like going to Canada. It's like, if you're going to just find some dumb fish that are ready to bite comparatively, man, I tell you what, North Dakota is the place to come and catch a limit. It really is the land of opportunity.
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, you're only as good as the body of water that you're on, right? And there are some lakes that make us all look pretty good, or they can, right? They've got the potential. And here's what I love about it, you know, especially, you know, specifically some of the dish bowl lakes, for example, the Prairie Lakes. You know, you could put a boat in realistically with, I don't even know if you'd need a big motor. You could put your trolling motor down, keep the boat out on the outside edge of the weed line, and cast plastics, crankbaits, or whatever along a windblown shoreline with no depth finder, and probably do pretty well most days. You know, you don't need a lot of equipment. You know, this isn't real sophisticated fishing, like you said. It's got its own nuances in its own right. I mean, if all you've ever done is fish clear water and, you know, windy rigs and long snells and live bait all your entire life, you might scratch your head catching walleyes in a slough, for example, at 3 feet of water. It might, you know, take an adjustment, but it's something that, you know, once you grasp it and understand it, anybody can do it without a lot of equipment. I think that's important for the industry. We don't want to get to the point where, you know, you got to have, you know, big expensive boats and all kinds of electronics and all kinds of equipment just to go out and catch a fish. You know, you want to, in my mind, the simpler and easier we can make fishing, the better. But with that being said, probably the biggest takeaway that I have from just the traveling that I've done is that there truly is a lot of great fishing opportunities in a lot of places. You know, you look at this brown trout and the steelhead not far from Milwaukee. You look at, I mean, all kinds of different opportunities. I mean, there's some places where, obviously, where they don't have great fishing, but there's usually some type of fishing opportunities, you know, near people. But with that being said, when you add aquatic nuisance species, zebra mussels are the big one, but even Eurasian milfoil. I mean, there's a lot of different things that what happens is it really, really alters the ecosystem. And so if you have a favorite way to fish right now, for example, say right now you know that there's certain times of the year where you can bank on going up to Lake Darling, for example, or Sakakawea, Van Hook Arm, you know, places where there's really good fishing, and you know you can take your kids out and their friends and you just catch something, doing things a certain way. Maybe it's dropping a bottom ball from the spinner over the side. You know, keep your line at a 45 degree angle and, you know, fish these depths, these particular spots, and usually you're going to catch something. When you add zebra mussels in particular, everything changes. And so what happens is, you know, sometimes I feel like Mother Nature adapts way better than we do. You know, the fish will still find something to eat. They're still going to grow. They're still going to, you know, adapt to their environment. We're slower to adapt as anglers. Okay. And so what you see happen, and we're seeing it really happen in Minnesota right now, where, you know, people have been fishing Leech Lake, for example, their entire lives, Mille Lacs, a lot of well-known walleye fisheries. And the way that they used to fish no longer works, you know. And so you can either relearn and completely, you know, start from scratch and learn how to fish again, or get frustrated. Well, it's human nature to get frustrated, you know. And so the people that spend a lot of time on the water, you know, and attack that, they can figure out the changes, you know. Whereas the people that don't get to fish a lot, they get a lot more frustrated. And that's probably the biggest thing, is from a retention standpoint, you know, as far as, you know, good fishing, keeping it good, getting people out there fishing, you know, that component itself gets frustrating. You know, I look at like the Van Hook Arm on Lake Sakakawea. In my mind, Lake Sakakawea is one of the premier walleye fisheries in the country right now, bar none. I mean, that lake is fishing so well. And you look at the Van Hook Arm in particular, I mean, is there a better place to be than Van Hook in June, you know, deep water in September and October? I mean, it's, you know, some tremendous fishing up and down that reservoir. And, you know, people learn to fish that reservoir a certain way. Now imagine if you can't use braid anymore. The only way you can catch walleye is by casting, you know. I mean, that takes a lot of people out of the game right there, you know. And so that's the scary part, is that, you know, if you love that you're fishing right now and you like, you know, being able to drag stuff below the boat, you know, like fishing certain methods, presentations, whatever, you know, have your radar up on some of these things, because if we get some of this stuff, it's going to completely change how we fish. Like Mille Lacs, Leech Lake. I mean, if you were to back up 30 years ago, people would have been fishing a lot of those lakes in Minnesota, back trolling with a Lindy rig and a night crawler that's got a puff of air in it, back trolling, dragging it below the boat, fishing structure. And what's crazy is that you can hardly catch a fish on a lot of those lakes below the boat anymore. Those days are gone. I mean, you might get some windows here and there with some really strong wind or something where you can get away with it. But for the most part, you have to cast. And that's why forward-facing sonar is becoming such a big thing, is because these lakes have cleared up. Well, they can't drive the boat over the top of fish anymore. They can't catch fish below the boat. And so you got to cast at fish that are moving away from the boat all the time. You can't get within 30 feet of those fish. And so that's probably the big thing is, you know, you think, oh, the water clears up, the fish are going to go deep. Most of the time they don't. The weeds grow deeper, but the fish are still in 10, 12, 14 feet of water. Problem is that you can't get anywhere near them, you know, with a boat. And so, you know, that's probably the big thing is, you know, if you like the fishing the way it is, you know, pull your plug, you know, drain your bilge. And the thing is, and you know what? And one other thing I hear is, well, I only fish Lake Sakakawea. What difference does it make? I get that. Right. I mean, yeah, absolutely. But the rules have to be the same for everybody. You know, problem is you get somebody that's, you know, maybe they've got a you know, wake boat or something from Detroit Lakes, and they take it to Jamestown Reservoir. They decide to drive out to Bismarck or whatever, you know, or, you know, that's in the rules have to be the same. It's got to be simple, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where this all shakes out in the next 5 years, 10 years. But so far, knock on wood, we've been lucky.
When you look across the Midwest and the capital walleye fisheries, and you look, you know, as the seasons come and go, different places are, you know, kind of get popular, right? Anybody that watches YouTube knows that, you know, like the Fox River, the, you know, Green Bay in the spring and all the tribs there is a cool thing, the Rainy River, whatever. But when you look at the big picture of the opportunities and what, you know, aquatic nuisance species can the type of effect it can have on the big picture, you know, looking at North Dakota, a lot of these opportunities, you know, with the potholes or Devil's Lake or, you know, Sakakawea, and you guided on Devil's Lake for many years. Like, the opportunities we have here are still like family friendly opportunities throughout the year. Every month of the year that you can fish, you know, it's the type of fishing that, you know, I just think about Sakakawea. You know, you look at Van Hook, look at, you know, in June, look at the amount of boats where it's, you know, mom and dad and three kids, you know, that none of them are over the age of 12, and everybody's catching fish because the type of methods, it's the fishery that it is it's family friendly. But if you go to the, you know, like, if you know, you go to Green Bay in the spring, and, you know, the power fin, you know, it's not a boat where there's dad and like four kids under the age of, you know, 11. you know, it's not the type of fishing that's really always family friendly, if that makes any sense. I feel like the industry definitely needs to sort of identify, we need to sort of highlight, you know, so how, you know, what the value of some of these opportunities are. And I think North Dakota is one of those places where, by and large, the opportunities here are family friendly. I think that's kind of, that's my big picture takeaway of it. I don't know, maybe you have a different perspective on that.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, obviously there are things you can do, like on Green Bay, for example, say grandpa and two grandkids could troll planer boards, for example.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's certain things you can do at times of the year, but then there's other times of the year where you might be really limited, you know? And yeah, I mean, I think North Dakota, what we have is special, you know, especially with some of these premier fisheries that we have, where it doesn't take a lot of equipment. You can catch fish a lot of different ways, but you don't have to be, say, in good enough shape to stand up in the front of the boat in 2-foot waves, 3-foot waves all day. You know, chasing fish around with forward-facing sonar, you can sit in the back of the boat and, you know, drag something below the boat and do your thing, you know. And so I think that makes it conducive for more people. You know, it spreads it out where more people can experience good fishing and you know, participate, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's something to that, that, you know, a lot of people, if they've never been anywhere else, they might not even understand, you know.
Right.
Is that, yeah, I mean, we got, you know, and the other thing is, I mean, I like to fish for bass. I love fishing for smallmouths and largemouths or whatever. I guess I haven't really met a fish I didn't like, and I enjoy doing different things. But, you know, by and large, a lot of North Dakota anglers are hung up on walleyes. I mean, that's their thing. They look at a bass like a carp, you know, like
yeah,
a tractor.
Yeah, yeah.
And which is fine. I get it. And tell you what, a lot of these invasive species, for whatever reason, just seem to kind of correlate with smallmouths and largemouths, right? You get Eurasian milfoil in a lake. Well, guess what? If there's any largemouths present, they do really well. And everything else kind of gets squeezed out. You add zebra mussels to the lake, and if there's a smallmouth bass population in the lake, that is going to explode, you know. And so if you don't like bass, look at them as a trash fish, and all you want to do is catch walleyes, you know, drain your bilge and live well. It seems like, especially on smaller lakes, it seems like, you know, that's one thing you see. So.
All right. Now we're going to give Jason the final thought here at the end of the episode, but it is time for us to get to know Ben Holen, the aquatic nuisance species coordinator in North Dakota. Ben, we got to get to know you, man. Where are you from? Where were you born and raised? What is your story?
Sure. I guess I'm originally from Bismarck, North Dakota, pretty heavily, like many in the outdoors. I think my parents originally just used lakes and fishing as a way of babysitting. They dropped me and my brother off inside of a local lake and just let us fish for hours while they did whatever they had to do. So fishing's always been a part of my life, and our aquatic resources here in North Dakota are really second to none. After high school, I knew I wanted to do something in conservation and outdoors. So I started working for the North Dakota Game and Fish as a seasonal. I went to school at Valley City State University. After a couple summers of working for North Dakota Game and Fish, I decided to go work for Idaho Fish and Game and have a change of pace and work on the fisheries out there. So I worked at Idaho Fish and Game. After I graduated, I still worked for Idaho Fish and Game down in the research office in the Boise area. And then after that, I moved out to Utah doing cutthroat trout restoration. I did that for like 11 months. After that time period, a job opened up here in North Dakota as aquatic nuisance species biologist. And it was an opportunity to move home and work on a lot of the lakes that I grew up fishing on. And I really coveted that opportunity and moved back to North Dakota. And then within a year's time, I actually got promoted to the aquatic nuisance species coordinator, where I've been the past 4 years.
Like, how did you know at a young age that you wanted to do something like this?
I just knew the person I am. I like working with my hands, doing physical kind of work and stuff like that. So I knew that sitting behind a computer or an office job you know, just was not for me. I would lose patience and, you know, I would go stir crazy. So I just think the outdoors was a good opportunity to, you know, work out in the outdoors was always something that I was interested in, being able to work with my hands, being able to, you know, be in lakes, and do some more physical work was great. I think my dad set me up really well for that. We've been, you know, fishing since we were very little. You know, we've been working outdoors, whether it just be pounding fence or whatever. So it was really marriage between, you know, that outdoors passion that I had and just the want and need to, you know, do something physical in the outdoors and not behind a desk all day.
Getting us up to speed to what you do today, and I want that to be a big part of this conversation, obviously. But working in ANS, like, was that, or your ANS coordinator, like when did that sort of become the opportunity in your mind? Was that some of the stuff that you were studying, like, early on in school? Like, was that, like, part of your passion or part of the end goal is to kind of be in the position you are today? Or how does that sort of evolve into, you know, you knew you wanted to do something outdoors, you knew you wanted to do something in fisheries. How does it get to ANS? What's your story there?
You know, it was a combination of it being an opportunity. When I originally started as the aquatic nuisance species biologist, I hadn't spent a lot of time in ANS. I'd been more engaged in the fisheries management, and I still have a passion for that fisheries management. But, you know, aquatic nuisance species protection, I felt like was a really good step in my career, just because the ANS standpoint involves so many different aspects of, you know, education, prevention, a ton of coordination, whether it be on the local or national level. And it was a really, you know, a good stepping stone for my career to be able to grow and diversify my experience so that I just have a good set of skills going into whatever job opportunity that I might find next. But I do enjoy my job right now.
So let's talk a little bit about what your job entails. What does it mean to be your job title?
Sure. I guess it means I get thrown in a lot of different directions. I'm located here out of Jamestown. We do a ton of different stuff, whether it be on the education side, where I'm working with our digital marketing staff, our education staff, trying to promote ANS awareness within North Dakota. We do events like kids events, meet with wildlife clubs, meet with water boards, you name it. We kind of meet with those aspects. So the education heavy, definitely throughout the year, it runs all the time. When summer starts warming up, the species start waking up a little bit and start reproducing. We switch to a monitoring aspect. So we'll get out on lakes, we'll do snorkeling surveys, we'll do plankton tow nets, we'll do eDNA to try to detect some of these species that might be out there that we haven't found already. The earlier we can detect some of these ANS, the better our management strategies are for them, for preventing the spread. And also with that, we'll do some, you know, ANS inspections here. We just got through hiring our summer seasonal staff, so we'll start here early May. We were on crews of watercraft inspectors around the state. So we got to train them, get them all in, and then we basically turn them loose here starting in May. So there is just a ton of different aspects. We're managing ANS prevention devices, whether it be CD3s or eyelids, virtual inspection cameras. I coordinate nationally and regionally with a lot of states going around us, learning the latest science on ANS, talking to them, learning lessons of what they're doing and how we can better incorporate in our program. And then I also have to keep an ear, you know, onto Washington, what's happening on the national level, if there's any grant opportunities or any funding coming down the road for ANS in our state. So just a wide variety of different aspects to being the ANS coordinator here in North Dakota. And I've really enjoyed the opportunity to diversify my experience here and continually, and there's lots of challenges, but it's fun to work through those challenges.
What is sort of the current status where we're at with aquatic nuisance species that are in North Dakota?
Sure. In general, we're very, very lucky in North Dakota. We have only 8 documented aquatic nuisance species. Most of those species are really limited in their range in the state. So like zebra mussels are only found in 4 lakes and 3 rivers here. Beyond zebra mussels, we have some silver carp, big head carp, grass carp, which are mainly in the James River system there. We have a few aquatic vegetations like curly pondweed, which is probably our most widespread ANS besides common carp. Eurasian water milfoil is only found in the Cheyenne River. We got some flowering rush around the state. And then common carp are in many different water bodies out there. But in general, we're just very lucky in North Dakota to have, you know, very, very few lakes out there with aquatic nuisance species, which is, you know, rare in a lot of circumstances. But there's species not too far over our border that we're constantly looking for and concerned about.
Of any of the infestations, like what's the worst one? What's the biggest example of aquatic nuisance species in North Dakota?
You can definitely see on Lake Ashtabula where, you know, every hard substrate in that lake's probably got 2-3 inches thick of zebra mussels on it. We put out settlement samplers around the lake, and it's not uncommon to see, you know, mussel settlement in just a 6-7 month time of 100,000 individuals plus. So basically any dock lift or anything in the water gets completely caked with zebra mussels in that lake. It causes a lot of problems on beaches with people, you know, cutting their feet or whatever. They got zebra mussels rolling around. We actually do have water infrastructure on Lake Ashtabula. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has Bald Hill Dam National Fish Hatchery below it. And zebra mussels completely clogged up that water intake last year to the point where the feds couldn't pass water into those ponds and sustain fish, you know. So it's from a water infrastructure standpoint, those zebra mussels are terrible. We've definitely seen probably clearer water, increased vegetation line reported from cabin owners. So when, you know, they fished shallower and stuff like that, they're now running into vegetation that's creeping out farther and farther into the lake. So, and cause problems that way. But yeah, Ashtabula would be our, by far, shining example of worst case scenario as far as zebra mussel colonization, because they are thick in that lake.
What are some of the current regulations? Given our current status, what is sort of the current regulations and sort of the strategy that's being implemented, you know, on anglers specifically, you know, for this? So, you know, what are we making awareness for, or what are we making awareness of?
I mean, the regulations are simple and easy to follow, and that's what's great about it, right? So removing vegetation, pulling plugs, draining water, making sure you have a clean boat and you're not transporting any prohibited species, not moving live bait into North Dakota, you know, and docks and lifts we have regulations on and things like that. But you know, the main overall thing is just being your own watercraft inspector out there on the landscape. When you're done recreating, that you're removing all vegetation, you're pulling all plugs, and you're draining your watercraft to the best of its ability.
One thing that I definitely want to hear about, and it's kind of a behind the scenes conversation, I feel like, because it's not, you know, it's not something that we talk about all the time, or people don't always have direct access to somebody like you to ask these questions, but that coordination, you know, that you talk about with other states and you know, neighboring states and on a national level, being plugged into all that, I think it's important to hear about that and you know, what you do there, how much you learn from that, because I think it's important for people to know that you're working with, you know, everybody's working together on this.
I guess to start it off, I'll kind of give it just a broad picture. So on the federal level, there's something called the Aquatic Nuisance Species Task Force. And within that task force, there's a couple regional panels out there. And in North Dakota, we're kind of interesting in that we sit in 2 different regional panels. We sit in a Western regional panel, which is basically North Dakota, South Dakota, and all the plain states, and then going west. And then we also sit in the Mississippi River Basin panel, which is all the states in the Mississippi River Basin panel. So like next week actually is our Mississippi River Basin meeting in Arkansas. And I'll be traveling down to Little Rock, Arkansas to meet with Mississippi River Basin states. And we're really going to share what's going on from a, you know, education standpoint. What are effective strategies for raising ANS awareness in our states? What aren't our effective strategies for raising ANS awareness in our states? What's the status of, you know, Asian carp in our states? You know, what are we seeing for early detection out there? What are techniques that are, we can utilize in our states to detect carp at the northernmost range here in North Dakota? What are the effective management strategies for keeping carp out of new waters? So, you know, barriers and things like that, or how are we more effectively doing carp removal in certain areas to, you know, regain our just native fish communities in here that carp have overwhelmed. So there's just a lot of different aspects out there that, you know, states can learn from each other. We can get in one room, discuss what's working, what's not working, and then hopefully take that stuff home to our state to better help our individual programs. So the ANS community in general is a very tight-knit community. We lean on each other. You know, even yesterday I had a phone call, and we meet once a month with basically all Western state ANS coordinators to discuss issues that affect us nationally and regionally, and how we can you know, work through some of those issues as a combined collaborate unit.
Yeah, I think it's important to hear that, knowing that you guys are putting in the work. You do have the best information available, you know, and everybody's working together. You know, I think that's a part of the awareness that I think that is important for us to touch on. That being said, though, like, what defines aquatic nuisance species, or when you go other places, it's AIS, you know, aquatic invasive species, or, you know, but here in North Dakota, aquatic nuisance species, like, what makes something a nuisance species versus something else that can spread or be transferred that isn't a nuisance species? Like spend a little bit of time defining that.
We usually, I guess in many states, it's aquatic invasive species or aquatic nuisance species. In North Dakota and some other states, those words are basically interchangeable. We're all talking about the same thing usually. So they're non-native plants, animals, or even pathogens out there that get introduced to our waters that can have negative effects. They can negatively affect, you know, the species and biodiversity in those waters, the ecology, the water infrastructure in them, or the economic value that goes along with those waters. So that's kind of what we're talking about when it comes to aquatic nuisance species, or AIS, out there.
You know, a lot of those conversations are kind of, they're tough. It's like, maybe doom and gloom, or, you know, just people get pretty heated about some of these things. But as we're learning, and again, maybe you can kind of comment on this just from, you know, coordinating with other states or whatever, like other places that have higher infection rates or have had, you know, zebra mussels, for example, or you look at the Great Lakes with gobies and, you know, just, you know, some of this stuff, like, they've had it for a lot longer. And, you know, from an angling standpoint, it doesn't always mean doom and gloom. It doesn't always mean that it's the end of something being good. But it's definitely a big change in a lot of cases, you know, so that's what we're trying to bring awareness to.
And I've heard Jason say it too, and he's right on with it. A lot of times, you know, anglers and people are the last, you know, ones to adapt to a new situation. So, whenever you introduce a new aquatic nuisance species, like, say, zebra mussels into a water body, they're kind of manipulating their whole environment. They're ecological engineers. So they're changing things within that water. And a lot of times those fish are really resistant, really resilient out there, and they'll change and find the new food sources and adapt to that new change that's out there relatively well in some cases. In other cases, not so much, but it's water body specific. But oftentimes, you know, we as people do not, you know, adapt to those environmental conditions very well. You know, we're stubborn. We like to stick to our same angling you know, activities out there. We're doing our same things. We like pulling bottom bouncers or whatever it might be. And we're not willing to adapt and try new things. So a lot of times, you know, aquatic nuisance species could get in a water body. The fish population might be doing well, but the angler doesn't adapt to it very well. And now they think that fishing is not good, when the real case is they got to be changing their tactics based on the new environment out there. Something like zebra mussels might increase water clarity out there. So walleye might be, you know, biting later into the evening. So if you're fishing your typical hours out there, you know, sunset or sunrise, you might be missing the new bite because of that later in the evening. So, I think in general, you know, our wildlife populations are pretty resilient in some cases out there, but people are often less resilient and less willing to adapt.
Are there any examples out there where, on a large scale, you know, aquatic nuisance species, like anything specific that has like eliminated large fishing opportunities?
I think regionally, there probably is. If you go to some of the, you know, rivers systems, probably in Missouri River or Mississippi, where stuff like Asian carp has just gotten to way over abundance opportunities. And have basically eliminated a lot of the native species in that range, just because they're just competing for space, resources, and everything else. I think that you can say that in some opportunities, in some circumstances, they have eliminated the fishing opportunity in that area. And we, I guess, in North Dakota have seen that in the past, too, where, you know, we have some water bodies maybe in western North Dakota that get common carp and they become overabundant in that area. Common carp are also ecological engineers out there on the landscape, you know, uprooting vegetation, causing more sediment to get in the water, making waters more eutrophic. And now you have a fishery that is void of vegetation, void of nutrients, and is overabundant with common carp, and your native species will suffer. So there are, you know, circumstances out there where ANS get introduced to water and your fishing opportunities can really, really be hurt.
What are some of the more impactful topics of conversation in and around ANS that we could just speak more on or bring more awareness to?
I guess, you know, aquatic nuisance species is as much biological as it is a human dimensions issue out there, because it's kind of a marriage of, you know, people and the biological aspect that's happening, right? So as an ANS coordinator, I'm not only worried about what's happening on the biological front, but also on the human dimension side. So there are a ton of different water user groups out there besides anglers that, you know, as an ANS coordinator, I have to reach. I know that this is, you know, mainly a fishing podcast, but, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to reach wakeboard boaters and pet owners and commercial equipment drivers. So there's just a ton of different aspects to try to, you know, psychoanalyze people, try to make them think what they tick, you know, try to figure out what makes them tick, and then try to, you know, get education material in front of them that they'll respond to, and then make a daily commitment in their lives to change some aspect to better prevent the spread of ANS in North Dakota and on the regional schedule, regional level. So it's kind of interesting, just a marriage of the psychology of people, what makes them stop and look at their trailer, look at their boat every time, and figure out, you know, what we can be doing as a state agency to increase that individual action.
If a huge like road job crew or construction crew comes in from, say, another state, and they're doing a road job that kind of, you know, comes in contact with water body or whatever, like, is there, do you do like backhoe inspections just like you would do like a boat inspection there?
Sure. So I guess in North Dakota, it's not so much the DOT projects, but we have a lot of oil activity, water pipelines, things like that. Sometimes it's large boats getting launched, you name it. But we work closely with DOT and other state agencies in North Dakota, water resources, DEQ for those projects. Whenever there's that type of project in there, we often have to work with that contractor to inspect that equipment, because a lot of times that barge or tugboat or whatever is coming from out of state, and they're usually from larger water bodies that have aquatic nuisance species. We, over the past, 4 or 5 years, have actually probably found more zebra mussels on commercial equipment like tugboats, barges, and things like that than we have on recreational anglers out there. So those are very, very, very high risk equipment that we really, really have to work with all of our state agencies to be on the same page, so that when it comes to North Dakota, we can inspect that equipment and decontaminate it when we have to.
I think that's good to know. I think as an angler, it's good to know that you're keeping an eye out for everybody. You know, I mean, because like you say, as anglers, we can self-police. We can even police each other a little bit, when you see construction going on or you see things happening and you see license plates on this big equipment from other states, you just don't know.
Yeah, we're constantly trying to find, new or evolving pathways that ANS are spread. It's not just an angler issue. Anglers often get highlighted. And what we found, through the last, 4 or 5 years of doing surveys, oftentimes when we're on the lakeside, anglers, as far as ANS education issues, are the best, most educated people out there. Do they slip up every once in a while? Yes, but in general, lots of them know about aquatic nuisance species and the laws and regulations to prevent their spread. But there are a lot of unique pathways out there, and I can give you an example. A few years ago, we got notified by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that zebra mussels were found on moss balls in pet stores. And I'm like, I have no idea what a moss ball is. I don't know if you know what a moss ball is, but they're just these moss algae balls that were popular on TikTok and you name it, Instagram and stuff like that, that people were putting in their fish tanks. So what we ended up having to do is go to a bunch of different mom and pop stores and pet stores around North Dakota, and everyone was doing this at the nation at the same time, and looking at for these moss balls. And we did find them, and we did find them with zebra mussels on there. So at a national level, they really ceased the sale of moss balls into the country. They were coming from Ukraine. And then we, as North Dakota State Agency, had to go around to floral shops, pet stores, and all that, and work with those individual people to, confiscate those moss balls and basically freeze them out and toss them out the door, which is a hard conversation too when someone, is buying moss balls and wants to sell them, and now all of a sudden they got to freeze it because zebra mussels are on there. But it just goes to show you that there's unique pathways out there, and as a state agency, we're really trying to address anything that could, threaten our waters here in the state.
What are some of the mistakes or the simple accidents that you would see, from an angling standpoint, when you're doing a boat inspection or something like that? What are some of the tougher elements or the easy accidents to make when it comes to that stuff?
I can give you a rundown of what inspections look like here in North Dakota. So in North Dakota, we have something called roving watercraft inspectors. So these teams are stationed out of Devil's Lake, Valley City, Jamestown, Bismarck, Riverdale, and then we have some select locations like up in Minnegoshi and one out west. The watercraft roving inspectors really try to follow the pattern of traffic and really interact with those boaters at the highest use times, usually in the morning when they're doing launching, to try to look for watercraft that are launching on there. They follow that kind of traffic around, and what's nice about having the roving inspectors is if traffic changes and all of a sudden there's a hot prairie bite on one of our lakes, they can go and follow that kind of a traffic. The boat plug is common. It's a commonest mistake that we see out there, and I think for the most part people are aware of it and they try to do their best by it. But, sometimes we'll see little pieces of vegetation or a lone zebra mussel or things like that. It's some things that, when you're talking to a boater out there that, hey, if I were a boater too, I might have missed that small piece of vegetation, caught up in a trolling motor or something like that, you know. So those are, you know, common mistakes. But when it comes to ANS, we're all about, you know, risk assessment. So, you know, you try to do your best job every single time. Sometimes a piece of vegetation might get past you. In general, that piece of vegetation is probably lower risk than, you know, the guy out there who knowingly has a skirt of vegetation hanging off his trailer, and it's obvious to starting a new population out there. So that's what we preach to people, is just, you know, being your own checker out there. You know, mistakes are going to happen, but it's kind of a risk management standpoint out there on the landscape. You know, as North Dakota Game and Fish, we want people to enjoy the resources that we have out here. Fishing's never been better. We've never had more lake opportunities out there. We want people to get out there and enjoy the opportunities that are on the landscape, but also doing it in a safe manner and just having that conservation mindset. And it really just comes down to some simple activities that people can do at a boat ramp or in their garage that can go a long ways into, you know, preserving these resources that we have for, you know, many generations. And what's cool in North Dakota too is, you know, over the last 5 years of doing this, we've built up some inspection data, and I can look and say, you know, this water body or this ramp here in North Dakota gets, you know, 10% of its last launches come from a zebra mussel infested water body. So we're going to specifically allocate our time more toward this ramp than to this ramp over here on this prairie pothole that only gets 1%. So using some of that data to better inform our watercraft inspection efforts out there. So in addition to those watercraft inspectors, we should have upwards of 15 to 20 this year here in North Dakota. We also work to put out ANS prevention devices on the landscape. Some of these are wash station and cleaning devices, which help boaters get clean, drain, dry when they're coming off water bodies. So that, like at Jamestown Reservoir, there's some new pressure washing units that we encourage anglers and water recreationists to use here. We also have waterless cleaning devices like at Lake Ashtabula that, you know, have weed grabbers and wet dry vac and some other things that anglers can, you know, come off the water body and use that. We're also experimenting with some new technology on the landscape. You know, we don't have, we have a big state, lots of waters, and not a lot of people. So we're looking to do some more inspections. So we actually procured some of these devices that are called eyelids that do virtual inspections. When a boat comes by, they'll record an inspection, send it up to the cloud. It goes through a team of reviewers that can look for a potential violation, and then it basically gets flagged and can notify our enforcement staff. It's kind of interesting. While this system is taking that video, it's also actively communicating to boaters on the landscape there. So it's got an audio message. So that audio message I can program to say, hey, you are now entering Lake Ashtabula, a zebra mussel infested water body. These are the steps you need to take when coming off the water body to make sure you're clean, drain, dry, and you're not accidentally spreading zebra mussels. So now you're adding that audio element out there on the ramp, which is kind of cool to see. I know a lot of us hunters and anglers get sign fatigue, and often you see the same sign and you forget about it. But when people hear the audio, it definitely perks their head around, and it's just a one last reminder before they go on the water body.
When you're inspecting boats and you find something, like, well, what ultimately ends up being this the process, or what's sort of the spectrum of things that happen? I mean, because it's not really like consequences. It's not like people are going to go to jail or something like that if something gets found. Like you said, you know, accidents happen, mistakes happen. You know, people should not be shocked to realize that, you know, most of you, if not all of you, or, you know, people that work for you and yourself, like learning that you grew up fishing, that should not be a shock to people. Like, this is a kind of a passion that people want to get into this line of work in some fashion anyways. So it's like nobody's out to get anybody, and you're looking out for our best interests. So maybe address that a little bit, like what happens at a boat inspection, and just kind of ultimately tip what the typical scenario looks like when you do maybe find something.
So most of the time, our guys in ANS, just in general here in North Dakota and inspectors around the country, Their main job is to educate the boater about what they should be doing each and every time when the inspector's not there, talking about clean, drain, dry, talking about pulling their plugs, draining their water. When they do find something, maybe they find a piece of vegetation, they usually try to mitigate that risk. Finding a piece of vegetation might just be easy enough to pull it off the boat, inform the boat owner that, hey, I found this piece of vegetation. Just to be aware, you know, you want to make sure that you're checking your boat to not fall around vegetation here. So it's mainly an education standpoint. If they find water in a live well or something like that, they'll just politely ask the boater to pull their plug up away from the water body, drain it out, we'll wipe down that live well, and they'll be good to go. So a lot of times it's just simple reminders that our inspectors have out there to try to mitigate and lower that biological risk that's on the boat before we have our angling community or water recreationists launch onto the water body.
With the regulations, the way they're written, like, is there a ticketable offense out there? Like what's the toughest spot you could find yourself in as an angler if an A&S inspector inspects your boat and they find something? Like what's the harshest thing that could happen to you that day?
Sure. I guess the harshest thing, if you came in, and usually at this circumstance, you probably know that you have zebra mussels. Say that you've had a moored water body on an infected zebra mussel water, and your boat just comes caked with zebra mussels to Lake Sakakawea or Devil's Lake, one of these water bodies that you want to, you know, prevent the spread. In that circumstance, you know, that violates North Dakota Century Code, and you could be ticketed for a Class B misdemeanor at that point. So that would be the absolutely worst offense. Typically, if it's, like I mentioned, vegetation or maybe even a dried zebra mussels, we would just work with that boat owner to mitigate the risk, which would be either a decontamination using hot water, or if it's vegetation, simply just removing that vegetation out there.
That's still like a soft approach. You don't see that or hear about that very often. Anglers ought to realize that being pretty darn reasonable when you think about, you know, the lasting effects, like, you know, one boat, if that particular boat were able to launch on Devil's Lake or Lake Sakakawea and begin an infestation that would have humongous change and all the things we've already talked about, you know, again, I don't want the vibe of this conversation to be like evil or, you know, fear mongering whatsoever. You know, if anything, I think that just hearing from you and hearing that from you, like, it's good to know that you have, that there is some power out there. There is something written that gives you, you know, gives you the authority to do something significant in that scenario, because it is a serious issue. And we do need, you need to have the tools and the weapons to come down on something like that. If, you know, if and when that ever does happen, but that being said,
and that's where our enforcement staff comes in. So a lot of times our watercraft inspectors are, you know, seasonal kids or teachers or you name it out there in the landscape that really don't have that enforcement power. But when they do find something egregious, you know, someone that is a trained peace officer often gets inserted to that situation, both to handle the boater and make sure that boat risk is not, you know, going into one of our prevention water bodies. Because you mentioned it, you know, like a Missouri River system, if zebra mussels were introduced to the Missouri River system, say in Lake Sakakawea, and were able to successfully reproduce and start a new population, you know, that screw up is a multi-million dollar screw up as far as water infrastructure, dam infrastructure, what we got going on at the hatchery, just zebra mussels' ability to colonize, you know, hard substrates from a water infrastructure standpoint would be, you know, millions of dollars worth of mitigation out there. And that's not even talking about, you know, the ecological effects that we could see in the lake. So it is a very serious issue out there in the landscape. And, you know, that's why our enforcement staff take this issue very seriously.
We've always had such a great experience. You know, we travel for TV. We launch the boat in a lot of different bodies of water across the states and Canada. And we stop in those inspection spots all the time. We've never had a negative experience in any way, shape, or form. They've always been, you know, just, you know, working hard or getting you in and out of there as fast as they can. They're always, you know, conscientious or at least, you know, good with your time. And, you know, the education piece, you just got to let them talk. That's part of their job, or that's what they're there to do. And a lot of times it's what they want to be doing. It's their passion. Don't be graceful with these, individuals. I think that would be my message, you know, in that part is like, you know, just have a little bit of grace and just know that they're there to look out for your fishing opportunities. No question about it. They're there to work for you.
Right. Yeah. And I know from my guys' standpoint too, you know, they're all conservation minded angling communities, much like, you know, the listeners of this podcast, but it is a tough job oftentimes out there. They see a lot of boats, interact with a lot of people. And sometimes they take those negative interactions with boaters and really just puts their head down, you know, toward the job. So, you know, the more that we can be positive and working with those staff, they're off, you know, doing their job, helping protect our resources here in North Dakota and abroad, and really celebrate and champion those guys. It really boosts morale and this kind of job for ANS inspections out there in boats. We need as much morale boosters as possible.
This past season, we had this mild winter. You know, is there anything in and around, you know, ANS or things that are passing across your desk that are just kind of interesting based on the current conditions with the status update?
I guess as an agency, yeah, and we've mentioned this, you know, fishing in North Dakota is really phenomenal. We got more water bodies out there. Last year, we had a real tough winter, and a lot of our water bodies, those shallow water bodies out there in the landscape, experienced winter kill, but our fishery staff were able to trap and transport perch, restock them with walleye. And so the water that it's kind of a double-edged sword. That winter snow cover actually killed a lot of fisheries, but it also rejuvenalized a lot of them as far as flooded vegetation and nutrients. So we're able to get fish back in them. Fast forward to this winter here, we had a real mild winter. I don't think in the state we're really expecting much for any winter kill. So the fishing opportunities out there here come here in 2024. During open water season should be really, really phenomenal in a lot of areas. So anglers can really look forward to a good fishing season out there. You know, we're just asking that when they're out there enjoying it, just taking a few minutes to, you know, have that conservation mindset in there and, you know, protect our waters and enjoy that resource.
You know, we're taking a good look at all the things that you're doing here in North Dakota and just, you know, hearing the status update that, you know, we're sitting pretty darn good and that we should be proud of what we have, and the preventative measures are worth it. I really like hearing you talk about the coordination with other states and on a federal level you know, that you're really, you know, the sharing and communicating the information that, you know, you're working with the best available information, the best available individuals, you know, across the country and all these places. You're learning this stuff so that we can stay ahead of it and stay ahead of, you know, stay at the tip of the spear, so to speak, you know, with some of this stuff. And so it definitely comes from a good place. And I definitely like hearing that, you know, our tax dollars are being spent that way.
And I should mention too that I guess tax dollars are not funding our aquatic nuisance species, you know, efforts here in North Dakota. That's coming off of boat registration dollars, ANS sticker dollars, and then some surcharges on license fees. So it really is our water users out there that are, you know, out there supporting aquatic nuisance species, prevention, education, and everything else that we're doing here in the state. So, you know, our anglers have that responsibility at the water body, but they're also contributing to the overall prevention here in North Dakota by buying a license. So that's great information out there.
Ben, I think this is great. I don't think this is going to be the last conversation we ever have. Certainly. I think that, you know, this type of awareness, these type of conversations are just really great. But just hearing from you that, you know, North Dakota has a guy, you know, an aquatic nuisance species coordinator, and that there's a team there. You know, I don't know if you're open to it, you know, if you have an email or if there's a contact or just some of the resources. Let's maybe promote some of that stuff to close this out, where people could maybe get a hold of you, or just, you know, just the website, the resources that that are out there for more of this information. Anything that you want to promote, go ahead.
Sure. So I guess you can learn all about aquatic nuisance species in our state and where we're at right now if you go to gf.nd.gov/ANS. We got educational videos, we got our regulations, we got species out there. You can really find out what's really happening in the current status of ANS. I ask that, you know, angling community out there, if you see something that you know is out of the ordinary, that you report an ANS sighting. You can do that right on our ANS website, you know, North Dakota Game and Fish. We're a small staff out there, so the more dedicated hunters and fishermen that we have on the landscape looking for some of these species, the better out there. So you can do that. You can also, you know, email me directly at bholen@nd.gov.
Let's bring Jason back into this conversation here for some final thoughts before we sign this one out, man. Jason, go ahead.
You know, you look at the state of fishing in North Dakota, and you look at how good the fishing is. I mean, our fishing is good, but here's what I really think is cool, too, is that I feel like other states and people are starting to ask questions and take notice in the sense that North Dakota does things a certain way. And, you know, and what I mean by that is, for example, no close season. Okay. I can't speak on behalf of the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, obviously, but to me, from the outside looking in, it almost feels like their mission literally is to provide as many fishing opportunities as possible for as many people as possible. Right. And, you know, you look at, no close season. Okay. Yeah. Catch some fish during the spawn. Well, you know, to me, it, you know, what difference make if you catch a 22-inch walleye when it's full of eggs, or catch it in the summer when it's not, it's still a 22-inch walleye. But, you know, one conversation that I had that really opened up my eyes, and it kind of made me reflect on North Dakota's management strategies. I was talking to a biologist out in Montana when we filmed that paddlefish episode a few years back. Okay. And they have some really unique ways of managing paddlefish. For example, they have days where you can snag and you have to release them, but you can only snag in certain areas, so that way they gather data, they band the fish and they weigh them and, or measure them and, you know, take information that way. And then they have mandatory catch and kill days, and if you snag a paddlefish on that day, you have to kill it and keep it, and it counts on your tag, whether it's 15 pounds or whether it's 150 pounds. You think, wow, why would they do it that way? Why would they, you know, why would they make you throw back small fish, for example, and keep a big fish? You know, I asked some questions on that because I was kind of interested, like, why? You know, there's got to be reasons, right? And it was fascinating to me because, you know, obviously with paddlefish, you're dealing with a fish that doesn't hit sexual maturity until it's 20 years old. And so you might not know what year classes you have coming in until 20 years later when those fish start showing up. And their mentality is, well, whatever fish, whatever year class is represented the most is what we want to take the biggest harvest from. And by making it mandatory catch and kill, you automatically do that. And so say that there's a year class, just a boomer year class of paddlefish that are 75 pounds, they're going to take the brunt of the harvest. And the reality is that that 22-pound fish 20 years from now might be really important because those 75-pound fish will be gone. And so as simple as North Dakota's regulations are, you know, no close season, 5 walleyes, you know, I mean, there's some exceptions to that, right? But it's pretty simple, where basically for a lot of people, they, you know, within reason, they keep the first 5 fish they catch. If they're walleye fishing, if they want to keep fish, and then they go home, right? And 5 fish died that day when the stars line up and the fishing's good. And maybe a slough's full of 20-inch fish. Well, they're 20 inches. Okay, well, those fish might be too big for some people. I only keep fish that are 15 to 18 inches. You know, but every person's got their different, you know, parameters of what they think. And it gets to be kind of a self-righteous tone with that sometimes, right? And the reality is that if you don't have hardly any 15-inch fish underneath that 20-inch fish, well, guess what's the most valuable 7 years down the road? That 15-inch fish. And so North Dakota, by design, kind of bears the brunt of the harvest of whatever fish is most abundant, right? And whereas, you know, you take slot limits and size limits and stuff, and sometimes they can be a very useful management tool in certain situations, but another times they can create a short-term positive effect where everybody's catching big fish, which everybody loves that, but then there could be a long-term consequence when you have, you know, too many big fish and nothing underneath it. Well, then you have a collapse. And so we've seen that on some Minnesota lakes, and all these slot limits have had, you know, 10 to 15 years to, you know, to work. And so, you know, people are starting to learn more about that, you know, because, you know, fish management is kind of an evolving thing, just like modern medicine, you know. States share data, they share information, states are watching each other. And what I find interesting is that, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, in other states now that are saying, well, why don't we do it like North Dakota? Why don't we stock fish like North Dakota? Why don't we have simple, you know, management tools like North Dakota? Why don't we, you know, open up spring fishing like North Dakota? And granted, we can argue we don't have the population base that some states do. But you know what? I mean, you look at the Missouri River in the springtime around Bismarck, and you would know that North Dakota doesn't have a population. I mean, there's people all over, you know, but you know what? It's the you know, the fishing's good, you know? And so I think there's something to be taken away from that. I think North Dakota's mentality towards, you know, at least the Game and Fish's mentality towards some of these topics is starting to get kind of redeemed, you know, where I don't hear so much anymore of, you know, why don't we do it like Minnesota? Why don't we do it like this? Why don't we do it like that? Now we're starting to see more states ask, why don't we do it like North Dakota? You know, and I think that's something that is kind of eye-opening to me as an angler. You know, it's something that kind of offers some perspective. You know, you look at spring crappie fishing, right? I mean, we know that, you know, yeah, I mean, you can decimate a crappie population in the springtime fish that are bedding, right? Even though, you know, some of these lakes just bounce back every year, just keep producing fish. But, you know, what if the entire state of Minnesota is open in the springtime? Maybe just make it a catch or release season for walleyes. Now you don't have 3 miles of boat trailers at the Rainy River in the spring. You don't have quite as much pressure on the opportunities that are open. You spread it out. You spread out the pressure. You know, that's the thing. Whenever you can spread out the pressure, you know, that's a good thing. You know, opportunities that aren't getting taken advantage of become opportunities that are coveted. And it, you know, the things that maybe are getting too much attention, you know, people start to leave that stuff alone if they have options, you know. So
like you said, spreading everybody out, then you start to realize that we have room for more people. That all comes back to like recruiting young anglers and things like that. I mean, there's just I feel like North Dakota
retention, right? I mean, I know a lot of people, for example, I don't mind the crowds on the Missouri River, for example, in the springtime. I mean, people are pretty polite. I mean, yeah, you're gonna have boats running by you all day and it's whatever, you know. I mean, I just love being out there and love catching some fish. Same thing on the Rainy River. It doesn't bother me, you know. If there's a couple other people fishing by me, so be it. But I have buddies that they just can't stand that, right? Well, then they go, you know, they bass fish all these obscure lakes in the state, or they, you know, check out all these sloughs that have walleyes in them, and you know, they're kind of doing some exploring on their own, and they're finding all kinds of awesome opportunities, and usually they're the only people in the boat ramp parking lot, you know. I mean, you know, and so that's the thing, is there's a lot of different things going on for different people. You know, if you don't like other people, that's fine. You can find places to do your thing, you know, or do something different, you know. But, you know, at the same time, those opportunities are available and people know about it, then, you know, people can take advantage of those opportunities. There's nothing worse than a lake that nobody knew about, a phenomenal fishery. And then one spring, all those fish are floating up dead from winter kill. And they're like, wow, I had no idea that all these fish were in this lake and nobody ever fished it. You know, what a waste. That happens in the state too, unfortunately. I want to leave you with a final thought, Taylor, or at least an observation. So, you know, we've got all these lakes in the state. We've got all these boat ramps. We've got all these different fishing opportunities. And, yeah, I mean, I know the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, you know, have, you know, signage up, and sometimes they'll even have people checking at different busy boat ramps at certain times of the year, you know, but they can't be everywhere, right? And they can't do everything. And I've heard, you know, some criticism like, well, we got to, you know, have a roadblock at the border and wash down every boat. I don't know if that's realistic or not. I don't know, but sounds difficult. But at the end of the day, you know, the it's almost like the North Dakota National Guard. You know, the people that can make a difference are the local anglers. You know, you see a boat from out of state and you see zebra mussels on the trailer, stop it. If your neighbor buys a new boat lift from, you know, somewhere out east, and or maybe his uncle's cousin's brother had it and gave it to him and it's covered with zebra mussels, stop it. It's a, you know, it's something that I think, you know, that if we all do our due diligence. You know, I know, for example, there was a pontoon boat covered with zebra mussels a few years back that was stopped on Lake Audubon. It was a local angling community that's kept that out of Lake Audubon, you know. And so that's the thing, is if the local anglers don't care or think that this could potentially be an issue that could affect their own fishing, then we're in trouble. And so that's why it's so important to, you know, at least make anglers aware, educate, you know, this, you know. Yeah, there's all kinds of great walleye fishing where there's zebra mussels, where there's all kinds of different things. But if you like it the way it is now, you know, have your eyes open, have your radar up, because, you know, chances are, you know, collectively, we're going to see things way before somebody from the Game and Fish Department will. You know, I mean, you look at even like, you know, reporting, you know, pull your dock in the fall and, oh my goodness, what's this? You know, zebra mussels on it. You know, that's the first line of defense, is the angling community. The general angling community has way more impact on this than what maybe what some anglers realize. So.
You know, I feel like that awareness, it is in the right place and it comes from the right place. And yeah, a conversation with Ben, I think, is just, it's just another in-depth look at what's going on. And some good education points. So, yeah, man. Well, I appreciate you being involved in this one. And, yeah, man, I'll let you back to it. Hopefully we have a conversation soon. Definitely some good fishing going on out there right now. So hopefully we schedule one of these together. We talk about some of the fishing, too. So, yeah, man. All right, dude. Well, I'll let you back to it, man. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.